you cry. No one could understand the way we feel. How would they know? How can we explain? Although we're different, deep inside us, we're not that different at all. 'Cause you'll be in my heart. Yes, you'll be in my heart. From this day on, now and forevermore. You'll be in my heart.
7-time Grammy winner Phil Collins has sold more than 70 million solo records in his career. 200 million if you count his albums with the band Genesis and other artists. He's also won an Oscar for Best Song for the animated Disney film Tarzan. He's now written the full score for a Broadway adaptation of Tarzan, and it's opening tomorrow at the Richard Rodgers Theater. It's my great pleasure to welcome him to my show today. Hello.
Hi.
For a while, it seemed that every new musical by a Brit would be written by Andrew Lloyd Webber. And now we have you and Elton John both for this season on Broadway.
It's a toss-up between who's more annoying, isn't it, really? Andrew Lloyd Webber's actually done a fantastic job for putting people back in the theatre, whether you like it or not. But, I'm not one that necessarily feels that it's a thing that should follow on. Pop writers becoming Broadway writers, it's just, it happened with Elton and by default Lion King, and I think
earlier was the Who's Tommy,
yeah,
which probably was the first real rock musical, although maybe Hair was, I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, Hair was before Tommy in terms of staging, but Tommy was in the last 5 or 6 years, I think, on stage. But it was written as a rock opera, so it could be deemed to be one of the first theatrical rock records.
Although this is your first Broadway show, I understand it's not your first theatrical job. Before you became a rock star, didn't you begin your career on the West End?
Yeah, I was age of 14. I was the Artful Dodger in Lionel Bart's Oliver, which was by that point in '64 in its fourth year, and it ran for about 8 or 9 years. And then it came off. I did it for 7 months. And then when it came back in 68, 69, I did it again. But I was older then. So I did Noah Claypole, which is the Undertaker's apprentice. But it was a great show to be in. I think that gave me... That kind of feels like this is not such a stretch for me to be doing something like this. Because it made me appreciate the theatre and musicals in this parallel career that I've had with Genesis and sort of my own solo career. I've always, on my computer, I've got My Fair Lady as well as Weather Report, My taste is pretty wide.
And you also had a small part in the Beatles film Hard Day's Night.
Very small. So small that you'd have missed it.
But that means that you were thinking show business, whether it was...
Yeah.
And probably not rock initially. So when did you decide to concentrate on music rather than acting? And why the drums as an instrument?
Well, actually, the drums are the first thing. I was given a toy drum at the age of 3 by my uncles. And the Christmases back then were literally a drum, a ball, a soldier, a car. it wasn't like a box of this and a box of that.
So, it didn't cost hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars.
Well, I got given this drum, and then the next couple of years, when I was 5, I remember, I got given a drum kit made by my uncles that fitted in a suitcase. And by that point, I was deadly serious. From the age of 5, literally, I did nothing but play the drums. But, of course, I had school to go to, and coincidentally, my mother, who was running a toy shop, got a chance to start a theatrical agency for children from home, which she did. And one of the earlier calls to her came for sending kids for the Artful Dodger, which was, it was one of those things that had a turnaround of 9 months in the theatre if you're 15 years old or under.
So there was nepotism involved, although I'm sure you were great.
No, well, my mother actually, it worked against me. My mother actually felt if I send him, they're all going to think that I'm a stage mother. So actually, she didn't send me for things that I maybe could have gone for. But nevertheless, I went for that one particular job. And then because I got it, I was kind of had, I ended up having to leave the grammar school where I was actually getting an education. I had to leave there to go to a drama school where my education ceased at the age of 14. So everything I know now is really self-taught, although, you know, I still see my mother, since my father died, and my ex-headmistress kind of have been just stayed together. So I have to be very careful whenever I say that my education stopped, because I still see this principle every day almost.
You are a songwriter and a composer. You can't compose on the drums, so you must also play keyboards.
Yeah, I taught myself to play the piano. I taught myself to play the drums. I taught myself to play the piano. We had a piano in our living room, and my aunt actually was a piano teacher, and I went to see her Saturday mornings to learn to read. But I think my ears just took over. You know, as soon as I'd heard it and as soon as I'd seen her hands, I just did it. And that's worked, you know, it's worked for me, obviously, but it's also worked slightly against me. In terms of if I actually could read now, it would be make my life as a Broadway composer a lot easier, you know, because I could do some of these things that I delegate myself. But
so you compose a thing and then tape record it or whatever, and then somebody else actually writes it down.
Yeah, I mean, just recently, I mean, the last 4 or 5 years, I've started to use a computer. Because when I did Tarzan for Disney, the animated film, I did everything on tape. You know, that's to say that whenever they wanted a different version of the song, shorter, longer, different lyrics, I had to re-record the whole thing again from scratch because I did it all. So when they asked me to do the second film, Brother Bear, or another film, you know, I had no contract with them, but it was another film, and they said, would you like to do the underscore as well? They also suggested I get a computer because this was going to make my life a lot easier. So I went from not having a computer at all, not even knowing how to send an email, to having to dive in head first.
Of course, that makes life so much easier because now you can really produce a record. You can
sound far more
thing.
Intelligent than you actually are, is what it means.
The case of Tarzan, the film, you were singing most of the songs,
yeah.
Weren't you? So
yeah.
That was very different than doing this for the show.
Yeah.
You had to write those songs with yourself, your own voice in mind.
Well, I actually signed on to write for the characters because that's the way it was traditionally done at that point. And then as we went on and I kept delivering them these demos, they kind of fell in love with the way I performed it. And they were also on the fence about whether Tarzan should sing. So by one thing led to another, and suddenly I was singing. But of course, with the when we went from there to the musical, I then had to give the songs back to the characters, and now they're singing them.
My guest is Phil Collins, who has composed the score for Tarzan, which opens tomorrow at the Richard Rogers Theater on West 46th Street, is it?
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder whether if Peter Gabriel hadn't left Genesis, whether any of this would have happened, because you signed on to the group in 1970 as the drummer, and then you became the vocalist after he left, and it's very rare for drummers to be vocalists. It's a lot easier to sing along with a guitar or a bass or even keyboards. But drums, I understand, something happens to your brain and the independence
yeah.
is very difficult.
It ceases to be. I'd sung in school groups from behind the drums, and I'd sung in Genesis prior to Peter leaving from behind the drums. And I didn't really want to be the singer. I mean, he left and we looked for singers, but we couldn't find anybody that we really wanted in the family. So eventually, we started to make the album that we'd been writing as a four-piece without Peter, and we went into the studio without a singer. We tried one guy that we thought might work. He didn't work out at all, and I just said, "Listen, okay, can I have a go? Let's see what I can do." So one by one, we rattled all the songs off, and that was a Trick of the Tail album, and then that came out, and we had to go on tour for it, and then we had this last half-hearted attempt at trying to find someone. Still couldn't. So I ended up having to go out front.
And getting somebody else to play the drums, because you can do a little bit where you keep time when you're singing, but it's really hard.
Well, it actually physically wasn't a problem for me. I mean, the coordination, having done it all my life pretty much, singing and playing the drums, that wasn't a problem, but it's a connection. There's just, with an audience, there's just no connection if you're sitting behind a drum kit doing it. And I mean, Don Henley with the Eagles had the same thing. We've talked about this. You know, he can play drums and he can sing, but people need to see, they like to see, have a connection with the person whose voice they're listening to.
Is the songwriting process pretty much the same thing, whether you're writing for a group or for a solo album or whether you're writing for a film? Because Tarzan wasn't your first film either. You did Against All Odds. You wrote the title song for that.
Oh, there's little divisions, really. You know, I mean, like, writing the song for the end of the movie isn't really writing for films. You know, it's just writing something. I mean, sometimes nowadays, of course, they'll just tag a song on the end of the film just to sort of help bring the film into the marketplace, you know, or to the living room through MTV and stuff. But, I mean, Against All Odds was pretty much near the sharp end of that. And Taylor Hackford asked me if I would write a song for the end of the movie. And I said, yes. I watched the movie and I wrote a song based on what I'd seen. But then there's writing songs for the storytelling of a film, which is more like what I did with Tarzan and Brother Bear. You know, and obviously writing to a story, you've got like a bowling alley, you know, you've got two sides and you've got to stick between, you know, stop from falling off, you know, whereas if you're on your own, you can do what you want. So, and in a way, that is all I find very exciting. The fact that one day I can do whatever I want, and the next day I've got a creative team that I've got to please. And I'm working towards helping that story work. And the bottom line is that whatever I write, I sort of say to myself, now, if this all fell apart tomorrow and disappeared, would this song go on my record? If it's a no, then it shouldn't really be there. So I stand by it, but it's just a different method of getting there.
And if it's a no, do you just abandon it or do you try to fix it up?
Well, you try to work out what it is you don't like about it. I mean, and just, you know, either take it out of the scenario completely. And I've got four or five songs that for one reason or another have been sitting on the sidelines, you know, during the course of writing this musical that probably are there because they didn't fit in with what I would be doing normally. I mean, there's a couple of drag songs in there that we wrote for Turk, the character, you know, which weren't quite honest. They were music hall, if you like, and maybe it's because they weren't honest. They didn't survive. Whereas what's there now is there because it works and it's honest.
And a lot more here than in the film.
Oh yeah, there's 9 new songs here.
And it almost feels at times like it's an opera. There isn't all that much spoken dialogue, but there's an awful lot of singing, and the songs forward the plot.
Yeah, well. I mean, I take that as a compliment, actually, and
you should take it as a compliment.
Well, no, I knew it was meant as a compliment, but I take it as a compliment because, you know, there's some very strong musical themes in the songs that we preempt and reprise as underscore. And, of course, there is dialogue. Of course, there is a lot of dialogue, but it's under some of that music, which gives it the impression maybe of it being pretty seamless. You know, I just tried very hard with it, to be honest. I spent a lot of time at a lot of personal expense in some respects. But I've spent, you know, 4 years doing this, and I've been here since Christmas supervising the music part of the show and just keeping an eye on things.
My guest is Phil Collins, who has written the full score, including continuity music, for the Broadway adaptation of the Disney animated film Tarzan, now on Broadway at the Richard Rogers Theater, actually opening tomorrow, with real actors, not animated characters. We will continue our conversation after this.
So here I am feeling
We're back with Phil Collins, the singer, songwriter, drummer, composer. His latest project is Tarzan, which opens tomorrow at the Richard Rogers Theater on Broadway, an adaptation of the Disney film, but with a lot more music. And I wonder how you even came to write these songs for Tarzan. Did the Disney organization approach you because you were a drummer and they wanted all that jungle drum stuff?
Originally, probably, yeah. I would think you never know who was asked before you. You know, I mean, you never know whether you're the first choice or whether you're the second choice or whatever. But certainly for me, it came at a point where in my career, I was crying out to do something different.
Wait a minute. Now, you not only had all the solo career, but you also have played drums for other artists, John Cale, Eric Clapton, Brian Eno, and others. You were acting. You were in, you had a small part in Miami Vice, and then the title role in the film Buster, which you played a gangster. In fact, you were looking like you were going to develop a whole criminal career just in acting. Thank God Disney saved you from a life of crime.
Yeah.
And you really just didn't think that you were doing enough stuff?
Well, it wasn't exactly like that. But at the time, from a personal point of view, you know, I'd had a huge... I mean, the 80s, I was omnipresent in the 80s. And excuse me, omnipresent. But and Another Day in Paradise and But Seriously were huge, you know. And I followed that up with what I thought was my best ever record, which was called Both Sides. That did not catch the world on fire. And I thought at that point, oh, that's interesting. Okay, well, maybe I've had my 15 minutes of fame. So let's think about what else can I do? So this was like 93, 4, 5, and I'd moved to Switzerland. I'd always wanted to take a big band out, and being near the Montreux Jazz Festival, I was given an evening to do whatever I wanted, and I formed a big band with Tony Bennett singing, and Quincy Jones, offered to conduct, and we took it on a little mini tour, and we played.
So that was more jazz than rock.
But it was something I'd always wanted to do, as I figured that this particular part of the fast lane had kind of slowed down a bit. So now, what else do I want to do in my life? And the big band was one thing. I was trying to get into writing film scores, but of course, it's one of those catch-22 situations where, you know, no one wants to let you have $100 million worth of movie to play around on if you've never done it before. So, and you never get the experience until someone gives you the chance. So Disney, out of the blue, came to me and said, would I like to be involved in their next animated picture they were working on, Tarzan? And as you say, because I was a drummer, it seemed to make sense. So it all came at the right moment for me to try and scare myself into doing something that I'd never done before. And I was just at the end of the Both Sides tour, worldwide tour, which was a huge 14-month thing. And I started writing and writing and writing. And I really lifted my game, I thought, because I was scared stiff. You know, this was serious stuff. You know, this kind of, these Disney films, they kind of, whether you like it or not, they last forever. And your children and your children's children and your children's children. So I tried very hard, and I wrote, you know, four or five years later, the movie was finished. But all this stuff kind of, it was not in the fast lane of MTV. It was not in the top 40 radio area. But of course, out of that, coincidentally and by complete luck, You'll Be in My Heart captures everybody's imagination. And that becomes a huge adult contemporary song. I mean, it stayed in the charts for years, and or months anyway. And, you know, then of course the film is a success and all the stuff that followed it.
And there's some irony in the fact that you write an animated film for kids and you wind up with an adult contemporary hit.
Yeah. Well, you've got to give the adults something to listen to when they go and take their kids to the movies.
So had you thought much about Tarzan over the years? After all, it is the creation of a British writer, isn't it?
Edgar Rice Burroughs? I'm not sure if it was he British. I met his grandson, a couple of times. And
Well, maybe he wasn't. I don't know. But it is a British story.
It's a
and
British
it's
story.
About British colonialism.
Yeah, although in fact, I think in the book, which I only read for the first time when I started working on the movie, I think he ends up going, leaving the jungle and going back to America, Baltimore or somewhere.
Yeah, well, we don't want to give away the plot here.
Oh, no, in the musical it's all totally different.
Yeah.
Of course, of course. I mean, that's not the, that's nowhere near the truth. I was not interested in Tarzan at all until... I mean, I'd seen little bits and pieces of it. I didn't really take it too seriously, actually.
There have been how many movies? There have been hundreds of movies.
Oh, yeah.
And then
Tarzan and the Lost Fridge.
And then there was Great...
Tarzan and the Crepe Shoes. You know, it was like there's been so many Tarzan movies.
And then there was Greystoke, which was...
Greystoke was actually the first real look at that whole story.
Now, my crack staff informs me that Edgar Rice Burroughs was an American.
Okay, okay. I
stand corrected.
I stand corrected.
No, you said
it
right.
You stand corrected. That's why I said he was an American. See, you could say anything. I short memory.
Now, when they with animated films, they usually have the actors do the voices first, and then they actually do the animation. How where did the songs come in on all of this? You probably had to write them before they even had the actors do their stuff.
Yeah.
So, did you know where they were going to be placed?
No, you don't know much when you start one of these projects because nothing exists. It's, you know, if you've got a live action picture, you've signed the actors, you've got a script, and you know, and it goes from there. But with animation, there's as a treatment, and a 4 or 5 page treatment of the story, which will change. And in fact, my instructions on day one were to do nothing. You know, they'll want a song at the beginning, they'll probably want a reprise of it at the end, they'll want a song probably where she tries to stop the baby from crying. And a couple of songs there and a song there. But don't do anything until we call you. So, of course, I start work straight away because I'm scared stiff. So I kind of worked 2 or 3 weeks just writing lots and lots and lots of little bits of music. All of which, well, not all of the bits, but certainly all of the songs in the film came from that period.
Now, music, not lyrics.
There were some improvised lyrics, yeah. I mean, You'll Be My Heart was kind of an improvised lyric. Come stop your crying, it'll be all right. I mean, the way I work lyrically, and it's difficult for people to kind of say, oh yeah, right, you know, believe me on this, is because they get used to the thing they've grown to listen to and grown to like. But songs like You'll Be In My Heart and In the Air Tonight and all these songs, the lyrics are improvised. I sit on my own in my studio and I just sing along to what I've started to write musically. And what the lyrics that you hear have come out spontaneously as a result of the feel of the music. So some of those lyrics, because it was written for a story, of course, you know, weren't necessarily relevant. Some were. You'll Be In My Heart was. I had one song that ended up being called Strangers Like Me that actually a lot of the lyrics was about going to America, because in the book he did go back to America. So obviously, you know, I would have lived with that if it was for a solo record, but it was for a story, so you have to stay within those confines.
You also have to know what the Disney people really want. In this case, the film has taken this Tarzan story to a new meaning for contemporary audiences. It's been cited as a way to teach children about diversity and tolerance for people who are different. And I'm sure that on some level you had to be aware of that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that that tolerance point is probably true of most Disney films. I think whether it's The Hunchback of Notre Dame, which was pretty much a long shot for kids, I think. But, you know, there's that point, that moral thing that comes into to most of their films. And I think it's a bad thing. I think that with, you know... It's something that we constantly have to be reminded of, and kids grow up and there are new audiences. I think it's something that we should be teaching our kids, that we are all the same.
It's just that the books have been seen as racist by some people.
Absolutely,
and
yeah.
We have a totally different take on
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. No, I was quite surprised when I read the book.
Now, You'll Be In My Heart, you recorded, well, it won the Oscar, and you recorded it with Glenn Close, who she didn't start off as a drummer, but she's also somebody who we only later learn has been singing all of her life.
Yeah.
Was that fun?
Yes, it was fun. I mean, originally she was meant to sing the whole song. But I realize, and this is followed through with the musical, that sometimes the singer can make the song work. And when it's taken out of the hands of the singer-writer that it can sometimes stumble. And I write, it's all offbeat. Come stop your crying, it will be all right. And that was very difficult for her because she was a Broadway singer. And
you're doing something syncopated. You're a drummer, and you think that way
and
anyway.
It was natural for me. And so we had a bit of a frustrating few hours with her. And, I mean, she took it very well. But in the end, she sang the first bit of the song. And then by that point, anyway, before we even got to that session, they decided that they wanted more of me vocally in it. So that's why I sang the rest of that song, I think. But, yes.
My guest is Phil Collins, and we're talking about Tarzan, which opens tomorrow at the Richard Rogers Theater. It grows out of the animated film and has nine songs added, and a lot of connecting music as well. I've heard that you've recorded the film songs in five other languages, in French, German, Italian, both Castilian and Latin American, Spanish. I don't know whether you speak all those languages, but obviously you can sing them. And I wonder whether you're grateful that they didn't ask you to record the Japanese, Chinese, or Russian version.
Actually, I did the five versions. Well, actually, the conversation went like this. It's like you meet different divisions in Disney as and when you need to. So we finished the film, and then I get invited to a meeting of the international department, and they say, now, we have a problem here, Houston. Normally we just have the songs and the character voices in that particular country sing that song. We translate it, no problem. But you have sung all the songs. And we go to 36 different countries. Now, how many will you do? And I live in French Switzerland, so I had some French up my sleeve. But I said, I'll try major markets. Give me your major markets first. So I did Italian, German, and the ones you mentioned. And
all Romance languages, but German as well. That's Swiss.
Yeah.
But did you speak German?
No. No, I just had to have... I wrote it phonetically. The first thing that happened was when the French translation came back, it was not what I'd written. And my wife, who is Swiss-French, she said, these aren't your words. So she ended up translating the French. The German will never know. Because I don't speak German. But we had a German drummer who was a good friend of mine, and he actually spent a lot of time on it. And the Italian and the Spanish, I had to take their word for it in the end. But anyway, I did a language, those five songs, I did pretty much a language a day. Every 2 days was a different language. And then I did Brother Bear, and I did the same thing again with Japanese on one song.
Wow.
Which was kind of interesting because, when I started writing it down phonetically, they all sort of, as if I was born in Japan when I started to sing it. But slowly, as we recorded it, I realized that they were actually just being polite. Mm-hmm. And it was like the hardest one to do.
Well, Japanese with an English accent.
Yeah.
And how long after after Tarzan was released, you were already working on other things, did you realize that there was going to be a Broadway production?
Well, it was talked about immediately, as soon as the film was finished.
Because
of the success of Lion King, which was just starting. And they had Beauty and the Beast, and I kind of figured that it was kind of an automatic pilot decision. Then they stopped and thought, well, how will we do it? And that's when the thing ground to a halt because of how to do animals after Julie Taymor had done it so successfully differently in Lion King. So, there's that abstract where you've got gorilla suits and it's very difficult to sort of find another way. So we just all went about our daily work until one day I got a phone call out of the blue a couple of years later from Tom Schumacher saying, go to London, meet Bob Crowley.
They came up with a totally different way of dealing with this than Lion King. We have a lot of physical movement, but much of it involves people pretty much flying through the air on wires and cinches and whatever, and it has to be one of the most difficult productions for performers to be engaged in because the stars as well as specialty performers are doing all of this.
That's right. Well, it was part of the audition process. It wasn't only can you act, can you sing, can you dance, can you fly. You know, I mean, are you scared when you get up there? Because there were some big, very big, butch, handsome blokes that bailed out on us.
And that has to be important, too. You couldn't have a Tarzan who didn't have
a physique.
Yeah, it wasn't at least a little buff. You wound up with a guy who became famous on American Idol, although he didn't win.
Well, I didn't know this. You know, I mean, I went to the auditions because at the workshops it had become quite clear to me that I really needed to have an opinion on who was going to sing these songs, because I didn't really want it to become total Broadway. I wanted it to stay in somewhat in the pop world, having seen some shows with some great pop singers in them. And Josh came in and he just sang beautifully. And Jen came in, Jen Gambattese, who plays Jane, she came in and she sang beautifully. I mean, I was just, it could have gone in a multitude of different ways, and I'm sure in time it will. But at least, you know, starting off here, we've got a cast that really are pop singers in a way.
And Chester Gregory II, who plays Turk, he really gives you a strong sense of soul there.
Yeah,
he is a wonderful singer. So, but this show didn't have out-of-town tryouts.
No.
Because I imagine it would have been impossible to do anywhere but in the theater you wound up doing it in.
Yes, although, you know, there's talk of touring it, you know, it almost in the way that a rock show would tour. You know, there's the theaters with the proscenium arches, and then they would build inside that proscenium arch, they would build like a rock rig with the flying apparatus. But that's one of the reasons we actually didn't go out of town, because nowadays with the internet, it's, you know, there's no out of town anymore. You know, in the old black and white movies, you know, you were out there and no one knew what you were doing. But now it's, you know, it's there in a second. So we thought we'd do a longer preview period, but with like three shows, 4 days off to fix. Three shows, 4 days off to fix. And the shows started to, the balance started to change halfway through, two-thirds of the way through. So we were doing more shows than fixing. But what it did mean is that we were playing in New York to a critical audience, even if they weren't critics.
And it's required that you live here since last December.
Yeah.
I don't, are you becoming a New Yorker now?
I've got an apartment here, which I haven't got the keys to yet, but I do own. Yeah, it hasn't required me being here, actually. I mean,
But you have been,
I have
much.
Been, because I felt it stupid to drop the ball at the last minute, having worked for such a long time on it. And, you know, it's one of those things where there have been so many changes, so many edits, nips, tucks, three new songs. If I'd have been at home getting a phone call and I hadn't been involved in why, I'd have been on a plane and saying, what's going on? You know, but in fact, when you're here, you understand completely.
Well, you also have to consider the fact that these people are flying. They're doing mountaineering techniques at the same time as they're singing songs. In one case, I think somebody's upside down while
that's
he's
right.
singing.
That's right. Well, it's Chester. Yeah, in fact, you can sing that upside down. It's pretty impressive. But in fact, when you say mountaineering, you're dead right, because, you know, we're not talking about a superhero in Tarzan. You know, we're talking about someone that's just mastered the art of climbing.
Yeah. So where do you go from here? Do you want to do more Broadway musicals, or do you ever imagine doing another tour? Was the first final tour the a few years back the last final tour as
yeah.
well?
Yeah, I mean, I did Europe in 2004, America summer of 2004. Then we had a baby, and that put everything back a year. And then just because this was going to open and my involvement in this show, I finished the rest of the world November last year, and I have finished with touring. I mean, I haven't finished with performing, and I will always be performing in some shape or form, showcase gigs, the odd, maybe take the big band out again. But in terms of the long rock tour, arena tour, stadium tour, I've done that now.
They really just take too much out of you?
I just would like to do other things, you know. I'd like to do other things like this, or movies, or do nothing.
Well, I'm assuming that with the success of this play, it's going to be a big hit, that you'll be offered more things, but maybe you'll have to initiate the next one. You can't wait for Disney to call.
No. I mean, in fact, it may not even be a Disney project. No, I mean, yeah, and that all takes time, you know. I mean, I've made some great friends. I mean, David Henry Hwang and I are talking about doing something
together. He wrote the book here, and he's just written a wonderful script.
That's right. I mean, he and I have become great friends, and we'd love to work together again. Crowley and I are very close. you know, there's lots of people that I've met that are basically the dust has got to settle on this, and then you start to rev up for something that's basically 3 or 4 years in the making, you know. But I'd love to get involved.
Thank you so much for coming by. You're Phil Collins, who wrote the songs and all the incidental music for the new production of Tarzan that opens tomorrow at the Richard Rogers Theater on West 46th Street. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
How can we explain, although we're different deep inside us, we're not that different at all? 'Cause you'll be in my heart. Yes, you.